Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center. We have two guests in the studio with me today. On the left, sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacchus, is Dan Strong, host of the Black Site podcast.
That's right.
Dan, did I do that right?
Yeah, filling big shoes today.
I'm anxious to hear more about your West Side activism and the things you do. And on the right, sitting in for Representative Dan McKay, is Salt Lake Tribune columnist Holly Richardson.
Hi,
Holly. Good to see you again.
Fun to be here.
We can have some fun talking today, and let's start with the Republican convention on Saturday. That means we'll go to you first, Holly. I was in Boston this weekend. I missed the whole
affair.
Lucky you. But I got a lot of I read some tweets. I got interaction. Sum it up for the listeners.
It was painful. So it was really... It took a really long time to even adopt rules. We were 3 hours and 40 minutes into the convention before we adopted rules, and almost another hour before we adopted an agenda. Lots of infighting. You know, people want to say, well, there's no civil war. I've heard a few people say there's no civil war within the GOP. I think that was put to bed on Saturday.
There definitely is.
Yeah, lots of booing, lots of really juvenile behavior for people who should be adults and who should know better. And we were there. The business of the convention is to nominate either a flat-out nominee, right, or to send people to the primary. And it took us hours to even get to that point. In fact, I had a friend who checked in at 8 o'clock in the morning. He left. He went back. He did stuff with other friends and family for 8.5 hours, showed up at 4:30 p.m. and had not missed a single vote.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah. It was painful. But Enid Mickelson, she was masterful as the rules chair. She's just my favorite. She can wield the gavel.
She's powerful.
Yeah.
She's intelligent.
Yeah, she is. She is. So it was just painful.
Dan, I want to get your comments, but I want to read this tweet from Ben McAdams because I thought it was so perfect. And Holly, it sounds like you read the tweet. I don't know if you did, Dan.
I have.
We'll see.
But he said, this is on Saturday. He said, as a moderate, some ask me why I'm not an R or a Republican. Then I see on Twitter a wild 3.5 hour debate about GOP bylaws while I work out, get my daughter to a soccer game, volunteer at a park cleanup, speak honoring veterans, coach a soccer game, and now cut the grass. Let's start there. That's pretty good PR going on in Mr. McAdams' world.
It is. Part of this is just how conventions go, though. I mean, the Democrats last year, when it was sort of a Bernie versus Hillary camps, and I don't think it was quite as deep as the Civil War we're seeing on the right, but there were bylaw arguments that went all day, and they didn't even end up being able to draft bylaws, and they had to set another date to come back. So part of this is just the nature of the beast when you have people who feel so committed to a certain ideology, and they get in a room together and they feel this is their chance to seize the reins of the party and take it in the direction they want. The show's called Both Sides of the Aisle, but I feel like you and I are kind of agreeing on this.
Well, the seize the reins part, I mean, there's no question that there's a faction that is trying to do that from the Republican Party, right? I mean, they hate Rob Anderson, the current chair. They hate people who, like myself, consider ourselves rational center-right Republicans. And to your point about bylaws, at the end of that 3 hours and 40 minutes, what we decided is that we weren't even going to address the bylaws this year. We're putting them off an entire year to the organizing convention for next year. But there were 30 bylaw changes.
I mean, how did you justify going the distance? I'm an economist and we think about opportunity cost and all the other things you could have been doing to serve humanity, benefit your life. What kept you there?
So there's a couple of things. One is I ran specifically because I am tired of my party being run by extremists. I'm tired of it being controlled by extremists. Mm-hmm. And so I ran specifically to become a precinct chair and delegate so that I could have a voice, a more rational voice in the process. Otherwise, it's just...
And so did you speak up at the convention and try to do
your
thing?
My vote, right? Yeah, I mean, and so I knew it was going to be a long haul. And so some friends and I took snacks and we said we had a snack and snark section. And it was fun. I mean, we knew it was going to be a long haul and it was. And in fact, I actually left, went home, got my daughter ready for prom, sent her off to prom and came back up. And so it was kind of amazing.
Unreal. We can do a lot of more color commentary about it. And Dan, I want to talk about the Democratic convention, which is coming up. But let's talk a little bit about some of the outcomes. We might go in the next segment with this. But Start with Governor Romney, Mitt Romney being forced into a primary. This Michael Kennedy showed well at the convention.
Yeah, he did.
And what do we know about him?
So Mike Kennedy is a representative. He's down in Utah County, northern Utah County. He's a physician and an attorney. He's a practicing family doctor, very popular with his patients. He's running as the not Mitt Romney candidate who could be taken seriously. So there was a large number of candidates, but nobody was really very serious except for Mike Kennedy.
I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and a gentleman mentioned he knew he had some Utah ties. He said, "Do you know Michael Kennedy? I hear he's..." You know, I mean, people know this guy.
Yeah.
Dan, what do you know about him?
I think he's a qualified candidate. I think most people think he's a good candidate. I will say that on the camps I swim in on the left, there was a pretty serious gaffe he made a week ago leading into this thing where they're discussing health care. And
so a doctor, usually right. Doctors would know this.
And he made a point. And I mean, I see the truth in some of this, but the context is very off. And he said, you know, we're talking about access to health care. We need to remember that access to hospitals actually kill millions of people a year, talking about malpractice, I assume, and contagions and so forth. But I mean, that is apples to oranges. We're talking about giving people health insurance so they can go to hospital when they need to. No one's talking about forcing people to go to hospitals where they might get sick. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah, right. So you still have these issues that are going to come up and alienate a lot of people. At the end of the day, Mitt Romney's going to win. I think everybody knows that, and that's what's going to happen.
Everybody but his supporters.
I would put all my money
everybody
on it.
Everybody but Mike Kennedy's supporters.
If anyone of you, those supporters, want to take a bet on that, I will.
You'll do
put
it.
My money out
Holly,
there.
Did you notice a substantive policy difference between the two of them in their speeches?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought their speeches were quite different. So Mitt Romney's was more aspirational, kind of rah-rah, and Mike Kennedy was straight red meat for the delegates. It was very Chaffetz-like.
Okay. Well, I've been to conventions where that happens.
Yeah. And so I thought his speech was actually very good. It was very well received by the delegates. But I wrote a column right before convention. In fact, it was published the day of convention saying Mitt Romney was going to get booed. He was going to have to run the gauntlet. It's not the first time I've written about that because he was, I think, a brave man to even take on the delegate system. But he did actually fairly well. Some people are saying, oh, my gosh, he lost. I was like, well, his showing was actually pretty decent.
49% of the people who...
He got pretty close.
Yeah. If you believe Facebook, the whole room was against him. So it was interesting to see him get that far.
Well, I would have been a big supporter. What about the Chris Herod, John Curtis?
Well, so the great thing about that race, I think, was... In the special election, John Curtis only got 9% in the convention process and then won, of course, the primary and then won the election. But this time he got 59%. And so Chris Herod has been out, you know, promoting himself. I'm the 2017 convention winner. Well, he can't say that anymore because he almost lost at convention.
Boy, so close.
There's not going to be any question at all that Curtis and Romney are going to win.
Dan, okay. So do you see it the same? I mean, you see the same with Romney. What about with Curtis and Herod?
Yeah, the same way. Curtis won last time because he's an overwhelmingly popular mayor of the biggest city in his district, and he'll do it again. He's also, if anything, probably won over more of the right-wingers who were against him at that time with his votes in Congress. Maybe he's alienated a few of the left-wingers who supported him, but I don't think that's going to hurt him too much in that district.
We should mention that our co-host on both sides of the aisle, Dan McKay, who is in the House, ran for the Senate seat and won at convention.
He did.
Looks like we will be having a Senator Dan McKay. Just in my opinion, I'll let the left speak up for that.
I mean, I'm sure we have a qualified candidate on the other side, but I think that is a pretty safe district for Mr. McKay.
And then the last one we'll mention, then we'll go to break. San Juan County Commissioner Phil Lyman. It looks like he will almost certainly fill the seat vacated by Representative Mike Noel.
Yeah.
No surprise there, right?
No big surprise, but interesting political dynamics, I think, overall.
Yeah, being criminally charged is an interesting path to the ballot.
Give our listeners just a little background there, just a tiny bit.
Well, Phil Lyman led the Recapture Canyon protest years ago and was charged in federal court. And I believe most of the charges end up being he was found not guilty on most of them, but there was maybe a misdemeanor or something he was convicted of. The point being, he's really ran on this take back our lands agenda, and that's popular there. It makes sense that he won, I guess.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm joined by Dan Strong and Holly Richardson. In our next segment, we're going to talk about what Utahns should care about. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
I'm Holly Richardson on the right.
I'm Dan Strong on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I don't want to shortchange the Utah Democratic Convention this coming Saturday.
Sure.
Dan, can you preview any highlights for that?
Yeah, I think a fun race will be the race to unseat Mia Love in that congressional district. You've got really the most press coverage has been devoted to Ben McAdams, the mayor of Salt Lake County, who's very popular, seeking that seat. And I think he's probably expected to lock that up. But there's been some other really great candidates who've made some inroads with the delegates. Darlene McDonald's one, Tom Taylor's one. I've interviewed both on our podcast, and they were really fascinating, well-qualified people. So if they can at least force a primary with McAdams, I think that'll be interesting. So that's the one to watch.
There are no signatures for that part of the ticket?
Yeah, none of them gathered signatures, not even McAdams. But of course, if no one gets 60% of the vote, then the top two candidates would go to a primary regardless. So yeah. That's probably what happened.
I think that's actually interesting because Democrats in Utah, from my perspective on the right, rarely have primaries. And so the fact that you've got a kind of a top of the ticket race that has the potential at least for having a primary, that's interesting to me as an observer.
Yeah, it would be. What about, Holly, I'd love to hear your color commentary on now that we've got the conventions nearly over with, we've seen the signature gathering, we've seen the conventions, or at least one right near. What are we seeing about delegates and the rank and file party members?
I think what's really interesting is that we're continuing to see that some faction of the Republican delegates are not willing to compromise on anything. And by compromise, I mean be willing to accept state law, that there's a dual path to the ballot.
Not fire their attorneys.
Not sue their own sitting governor.
Right. I mean, those types of things, right? I mean, there's this small group, we call them the Gang of 51, right, that held this, this meeting in December where nobody could show up. And so they passed these bylaws that were just crazy. And they try to punish their own members. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It's just bizarre. But I think that shows that the split between rank and file Republicans, there's 600,000 of us statewide. And then there's this small faction
51.
Of 51 plus some additional supporters. They're quite loud, but the reality is by the end of the day, the rest of the delegates were tired of hearing from them, right?
And so isn't it fair to say, I mean, the 51 used to be something larger, and don't you see this just over time just getting smaller and smaller?
I do. And so what I've been talking about recently is this with this Count My Vote initiative that is going to be on the ballot in November. I think by the time we hit the 2020 election, that conventions, at least on the Republican side, are going to be significantly less
relevant.
Really, because I think people are just going to say any serious candidate should be getting signatures. That's just flat out. You should just go get signatures if you're a serious candidate.
That's what they're worried about. I mean, you suggest it's getting to be a smaller and smaller group. They're becoming marginalized. They're losing their power.
That's
and
right.
The only way for them to, again, seize the reins or get that power is at convention. So as that erodes, they're freaking out. And that's why you're seeing the civil war we've got. I do want to, how's this for out of left field, stick up a little bit for the convention system in that I think they have one point that's a good one, which is if you don't have a lot of money or name recognition, it's very, very difficult to win a primary election where you might actually be able to make some inroads at convention. So I, for one, kind of like the dual path. I think that's a good approach. At least you can get, you can be a Chris Herod. I've got the endorsement of the delegates and run on that. And maybe that gives you enough to unseat someone. The problem is they're pretending like Mitt Romney is a carpetbagger,
right,
that these people don't have widespread appeal among Utah voters. And they do.
Right.
We wouldn't want like Jeff Bezos or someone coming in here and trying to win a primary with all his money. That would be wrong. But the people who are winning John Curtis's and Mitt Romney's and Governor Herbert's are legitimate candidates who have widespread support among Republicans.
Yeah.
So they just have the wrong target. But I think they have a little bit of a point.
Holly mentioned that we'll have the Count My Vote on the ballot in November. This is where we will take existing law and like cement it in place through a ballot initiative.
Yeah.
I'm aware of a lot of intimidation that's going on by the, I'm going to call them the Keep My Voice people, but it's the 51 and their supporters. But it's people that are actually, when you sign a ballot initiative, you put your address down. And those are that's public information. And people are showing up at people's doorsteps and saying, did you really mean to sign that? Did you really sign it? If it was fraudulent, we'll help you. this is pretty – I mean, these are tactics that are very intimidating, and I think it's worthy of some public scrutiny.
I think it comes from that same group. It comes from Dave Bateman, who has been funding the Keep My Voice effort.
He's
think
the
it's bullying.
CEO of a
Entrada.
Prominent –
Yep. Uh-huh.
It's the real-life James Bond villain behind the Keep My Vote initiative.
Right, and he's open about it, right? He's open about funding it, and his conspiracy theories are wild and completely out of left field. Maybe out of the
right field.
But I think it's bullying. I think it's totally inappropriate. There are some people who say, well, that's a legitimate way to campaign is you can, you know, make sure people really meant to sign. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't get their initiative on the ballot, and so now they're trying to intimidate people into taking their names off of the Count My Vote ballot.
It's interesting how what fertile ground we have for conspiracy theorists on the right. And I mean, this is not this is an American problem, and the left's been there before. But right now, it really seems like whatever the media landscape is on the right, it is fertile ground for people like Dave Bateman to release a direct-to-camera video alleging that the police department and Todd Weiler are in on some conspiracy against him. And I look at that and say, that is ridiculous. And I'm sure Holly thinks the same thing, but we don't have enough sides of the aisle in the room to represent the people who believe these things. And unfortunately, they're, like I said, they have a little bit of power on the right, and they're trying to keep it.
Yeah. Is it Rodney King? Is he the one that said, can't we all just get
along?
I mean, it was...
After he was beaten, yeah, it was that. It was him.
Okay, I want to switch tracks here a little bit. Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb wrote a column in the Deseret News. It was about what issues are inside baseball and what issues should Utahns really care about. And our producer mentioned this to me. And it just occurred to me that it would be kind of fun to talk about what issues Utahns should really care about. So I'll start out and throw one out and get the comments from you. I'm really worried about Utahns who are falling behind. So I work in a public policy institute. We run a lot of data. We see what's happening to poverty, to middle income, to the disparities of income. And there's a whole large cohort of Utahns falling behind, even in one of our most prosperous economies in our history. I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
Commentary?
I'm worried about that, too.
I know what the left's going to say.
No, I'm very worried about that. I think access to housing and to healthcare are huge, huge, huge issues for Utahns. And they're not just, you know, limited to, you know, handouts or help or giving something to people who haven't earned it, which I think is how some people on the right view it. It really affects society-wide. You know, if people don't have housing and they don't have healthcare, those effects spill out into our communities. And we see it. We see costs in other places. So I think those as Utah grows, we're going to have more and more of those people on the fringes, marginalized, that need help.
Holly, we're releasing a study at the Gardner Policy Institute May 1st, but the study essentially shows that we're not building enough homes. That our housing price appreciation is the fourth fastest in the country, and that wages aren't keeping up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't.
And I think one of the issues that both the right and the left do agree on typically is that homelessness is an issue. But where we start to get into some sticking points is what do you do after you, quote unquote, solve the problem of homelessness? And that means we need more affordable housing. And of course, that's they go together, right? You can't solve homelessness without a place for them to go. Mm-hmm. And yet we know that we're tens of thousands of units below what we need in affordable housing in the state. The waiting lists are years long. One of the issues that I really care about are refugees, mm-hmm. and I do international humanitarian work, but I also care about the refugees who end up in the state. And one of the things that we see with that population is that they come here, they get initial help, and then as that help starts to reach its end, these people are working minimum wage jobs. They can't make ends meet. The housing is, as you mentioned, hard for them to afford and keep up, and then they are falling further behind. And for some of them, I mean, the American dream is so far out of reach, right? They're safe. They're not at risk of being killed in some kind of a genocide, but it's also very hard for them to take care of their families and to get their kids into schools and those types of things as well. Yeah,
Dan, what have you got to contribute to a conversation of what Utahns should really care about?
I think there's some really exciting ballot initiatives on the agenda this year. That was mentioned in the column. You've got medical marijuana. You've got the Count My Vote likely to be on the ballot. You have Utah Decides. I'll put this one out there as the one I'm paying the most attention to. When Obamacare, part of that was to expand Medicaid, Medicare coverage. And it didn't happen. The governor had a whole plan, held the Utah. Most of the legislature was behind it, but it didn't get passed. So now this is going to be on the ballot for Utahns to decide. Do we want to expand access to Medicare in Utah? And the polls show that most Utahns want that. There's a small sales tax, I think, associated with it as part of this initiative. So we'll see. But it'll be interesting to see how representative the legislature has been on this issue when we actually get to put it to the people to decide.
Yeah. Holly, any commentary on that, or do you want to add your own issue of what Utahns should really care about?
I think that what Utahns care about or should care about versus insider baseball, I think sometimes those of us who are on the inside, we do get blinders on and we think that more people care about stuff that they really don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So largely we care about education. But when you get down into the weeds, I mean, people don't really care about the weeds. And so I think sometimes it's a matter of messaging and sometimes it's a matter of saying, look, this is how this translates. I mean, to your point about the initiative, here's the trade-off where we can expand Medicaid, but you're going to pay higher taxes. As long as people are clear on what the trade-offs are, right? But I think what people should care about are coming growth and infrastructure needs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Investment.
And that's kind of wonky, and you get in the weeds, and you just go, but how are we going to have enough water for, you know, an additional million people along the Wasatch mm-hmm. Front? Mm-hmm. How are we going to have, well, this morning, my
congestion.
Own transportation in, right,
yeah.
was difficult. How are you going to have adequate ways to get people from where they live to where they work?
Yeah.
Those types of issues, those are the types of things I think we should be looking at. And how are we going to, you know, educate the kids that are coming with these additional million
yeah.
people who are already kind of built out in a lot of communities?
Throw another one on the table since growth and in infrastructure is coming up, but we need to accept density.
We need exactly
to be willing
right.
to, you know, regentrify areas and have more density.
And everybody, you know, look, I mean, I see this. People want to say, that's all great, but not in my backyard, right? And
right,
we have
exactly,
that issue
yeah.
statewide.
Yeah.
That's all great. Somebody
we
else should do that.
We all got to deal with it, yeah. I was heavily involved in the ADU ordinance or accessory dwelling unit ordinance in Salt Lake City. And you saw this same thing. So that's an issue. That's an ordinance that would allow people to basically build mother-in-law units or divide their homes in a way to rent out Airbnbs or bring in more people. Affordable housing, right? And you had certain neighborhoods in Salt Lake City say, no, not here. And the city council was about to exempt those neighborhoods. And we stood up. I represent the Rose Park Community Council in this. We stood up and said, no, it's got to be citywide. And that's, I think, to your point,
oh,
we all have to accept the
you.
Density. And they ended up pulling that. And I think it's coming back this spring. So pay attention to that because it could be one that could help this issue of density and affordable housing. And by the way, the nice thing about all these issues we're bringing up is you can have a real impact. These are local things. You can go to your city councilman or your legislator,
yeah,
and
right.
if you have a real great idea about water policy, you might be the only one in the room talking about that. So go for it.
We have to go to gripes in a minute, so both of you get a gripe ready. But I just wanted to mention this. I speak at the governor's economic summit, and I do Utah Economist covers, and I put out some provocative cover and tell him why, and it's supposed to be the issues that are of most importance in 2018. I have a cover all queued up that I don't know if I dare do, but I wanted to throw it out at you. I have a picture of the Salt Lake Valley in an inversion, so just this awful picture. And it says, breathe easy. You're in the number one economy in the nation. What do you think of that
that's
one?
That's Dickensian, yeah. That's.
I don't know if I dare do it in that setting, but it's so interesting because we
the bear.
Well, you know, we talk openly about air quality, yeah. but we also talk a lot about all the great things going on here, and sometimes yeah. I think we sniff our own fumes a little too
Good
much.
Point. I forgot to mention the environment. That's the issue Utah should definitely care about.
Yeah. Let's go to gripes. Holly, why don't you start us out with a good gripe?
Well, I have to go back to the convention and just
well,
say
we
the
would
fact
expect
that we spend 3.5 hours before we can even adopt rules to govern the convention. What a waste of time. What a waste of a Saturday for so many delegates. And here's my disappointment, I guess, and my biggest gripe. About half of the delegates are first-timers. How many of them are ever going to want to do that again? Not that many.
Yeah, good gripe. Dan, how about from you?
All right. No, and I'm going to avoid politics on this one. The new Avengers movie comes out on Friday. Yeah.
Popular culture. I don't even know what the old Avengers movie is.
Very, very excited. Well, you might be part of the problem here because my gripe is people who lump all superhero movies together and say, I'm tired of superhero movies or I'm tired of Marvel movies. And they don't distinguish between Marvel Studios that has made 22 amazing films culminating in this epic epic event and these other watered down, like the Venom trailer. I get fed up with people who don't recognize 10 years of quality work for what it's worth and give that studio some credit. I'm very excited about this movie.
You and I will have to go together. I've never been, I don't think, to any of these. So, hey, my gripe, I'm going to go to Russell Westbrook of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I went to the Jazz game this week. The guy, I don't want to know. I don't know what word to use on air. It was a loser. He was a punk. I don't know what it was, but it was his behavior was so off the charts.
Romney took him to task, didn't he?
Yeah, and he was off the charts for someone who's, you know, supposed to be a professional in the league. You know, like one of the stars.
Yeah,
he looked like a loser to me. So I'm gonna keep rooting for the Jazz.
Go Jazz!
Well, we are concluding this episode of Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Dan Strong on the left and by Holly Richardson on the right. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. The program is produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.